Good evening again, and welcome to this evening meeting at the club. Shehu Hassan is my name. I'm the member of the International Forum-led Committee of the club. Okay. I'm your chair for this evening. We also welcome our listeners on the radio, and we invite our audience to try to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to you our speaker for this evening, Max Sabot. Max is a serial entrepreneur. He lives here right here in California. Max started his first high-tech venture almost 25 years ago. He actually developed a German language software for IBM personal machine. Okay. Max sold this highly profitable company to a Swiss company, and then went on and became CEO of a group of eight European-based software companies. In 1995, Max became CEO of Partech. In 1997, Max actually managed a company called EBIX, EBIX, and helped them to kind of turn the company around. Okay. Since 2000, Max has served as the CEO of Black Pearl, Fox Tech, and currently the CEO of Sherry Powell. Max holds an MBA, an undergrad degree in law from Frederick Alexander University in Nuremberg, Germany. Max was actually awarded the Congressional Medal of Freedom in 1998. Max will share with us today his vision of Africa and his experiences and what he sees as the problems that we have in Africa in bringing the continent into information age. Okay. Through Sherry Powell, Max has dedicated to changing the world one computer at a time. Okay. He has been successful, where several others failed, in providing laptop computers that cost less than $100 to millions of Africans. He believes that it's crucial to bridge this digital divide and make computers, very affordable. And that's why he has developed the most energy efficient, user-friendly, and green laptop that's ever made at the lowest price point the world has seen. So let's begin with Max.
Thank you so much, Shehu, and good evening, everyone, and pleasure being here. You probably, or most of you, some of you have seen the movie Avatar, and for some of them, it's a borderline controversial movie because there are assumed to be hidden messages in it, but we all have our own interpretation of what the true message was. I call it the Avatar principle. It's the takeaway, what was really in the movie. And the first one is really about the beauty of nature and how important it is to protect nature. The second one is, for those of you who have seen it, when you think of the main character in the movie, he was only able to understand the so-called enemy because he was willing to learn. And he had an open mindset, and it's really, really stressing upon the fact how important learning and how important education is. And the third one, which I think is actually the most important one of the movie, is about no fear. Whatever you want to accomplish in life, if you're fearful, no matter whether you have an Ivy College degree or other kind of top-notch education, if you're fearful, if you don't dare, you're not going anywhere. And I think that's what the movie very successfully summarized from my perspective. It's about the beauty of nature, really, and that we should all preserve it, about the importance of learning, ongoing learning, and last but not least, about no fear. So these are my avatar principles. So I'm here as the founder of Cherry Pal, and we have Cherry Pal principles. So again, before I get into it, this is not a computer or PC sales event tonight, so don't worry about that. A little bit about the history. Started out about 3 years ago as a project, and I have to admit, as a fun project. And the idea was labeled consumer cloud computing. Many applications are now hosted, Yahoo Mail, Google Mail, YouTube, Facebook, many, many, many more. And the idea was actually, if more and more of these things are hosted, is actually what we have available today, our desktops, our laptops, not overkill for that. I mean, they're rather expensive and come with all these belts and whistles. So the project was actually, how deep can we go? We build a computer really on the low end, and it still works. And, of course, also we were trying to find out, in terms of energy consumption, how deep we want to go. So I don't want to go into all the technical details. If you're interested in that, you can watch on YouTube my Stanford presentation, where I think I bored the audience for 1.5 hours with all technical details. So I want to spare you that today. But so we came out, what you can see over there, this little teeny tiny box, which was actually at that time and still today the most energy efficient desktop in the world, less than 2 watts, performs actually pretty well. And we got worldwide news coverage beyond our wildest expectations. So far, the good news. The bad news was more from a company perspective, that around the same time, you probably remember vaguely, September of 2008, Wall Street blew up. Our main investor blew up. I mean, we as a company went through a very, very rough time because our growth, our infrastructure was all built upon the commitment to get growth capital, which all evaporated. But we dealt with it. So we had worldwide coverage and were quite successful in terms of sales, but the worldwide audience, I want to put it like this, told us, I mean, desktop is cool, and I mean, you made your point, but we actually want a laptop. So that's then what we came out a couple of months later, and you can see that the bigger one is actually what we call the Bing 2, and we had a Bing 1 before. Which is a little bit better on the energy consumption side. I mean, it's a Windows XP or Windows 7-based system. But the Bing 1 was around $300 when it came out. I mean, it was well received, but then at that time, African partners basically said, I mean, this is not something we really need or can afford. So why don't you come out with something that is less than $100. And according to our design principles, then I'll come back to the point, which are high quality, low energy consumption, and expensive price, we tried. And the little laptop next to the Bing, the bigger one, is actually one of the form factors of the $99 models. So that's how we got into Africa. As a hardware vendor, we got, I mean, we launched the Africa model, and you can see the box next to it, December 15th of last year. We already had a lot of relationships, but we got completely overwhelmed by demand. And I'll get more into it later. But maybe we should first talk about Africa as such, where it is today, where it was 10 years ago, and where it might be in 10 years from now. I would say in the year 2000, so just 10 years ago, Africa was completely isolated. There is this one comparison where I think describes it pretty well. In the year 2000, there were more phone lines in Brooklyn, New York, than the entire continent of Africa. So hardly anyone had a phone, and of course it was very expensive. Another thing happened, I mean, coming from our Western mentality to donate things, in the year 2000, to some degree even until today, most of the computers made to Africa were actually recycled, disposed, whatever the right term is, that went to Africa. There was only one little problem with it, that most of the systems were virus infected. People used it for a couple of weeks or months, then it didn't work at all anymore. And that since people didn't know better there, I mean, that's the overwhelming feedback we received, that people consider themselves stupid, really, that something what people in the industrialized world use on a daily basis, they were not able to handle it, and it broke down after a couple of weeks, which wasn't their fault, but they didn't know it any better. So actually a program that was very well meant had exactly the opposite impact. Coming back to my avatar principles again, if you want to build a no-fear environment, this is exactly what you created. You created a fear environment where people thought they cannot handle something like that. We'll get to that also later again. So today, I would say it's an opportunistic environment. The cell phone adoption in Africa is absolutely mind-boggling. It's the fastest-growing market in the world right now, even faster growing than parts of Asia. In terms of infrastructure, in every country, it's different. You have most of Africa doesn't have cable or DSL connections. You have a pretty decent cell phone coverage right now, and due to some projects funded by World Bank and others, you even have in some parts of Africa an infrastructure that is far superior than we have here. The only problem is, like WiMAX in Uganda, in parts of it, the only problem is that people cannot afford a laptop for $800. So you have a terrific WiMAX system there, but you have very poor utilization. And let's say, excluding Cheripel for a moment, and also excluding one laptop per child and a couple of other initiatives, the standard offering when you go to a city like Nairobi, Kampala, other cities, is pricing usually there starts at, depending on region, between $500 and $800 for a system that is about half the price here. So there are all these hefty markups in Africa. And when we talk to our partners why they do that, and it's very easy, the volume is so low and they have to make a living, so they mark it up by at least 100%, sometimes even more, because there are many resellers. They only sell into small and mid-sized companies and government, and many of them only sell one computer a month, and it has to be enough to make a living. I'm just describing the status quo so far. So what is the opportunity going forward? So as I mentioned, it is very opportunistic right now, meaning they're catching up in terms of cell phone coverage and everything. But overall, there are still a lot of problems with infrastructure, but also with education, and even more so with mindset. And that's why I came up with this avatar example in the beginning. Almost with every single of our partners in Africa, where we sponsored a number of projects, even in development, like in Nairobi and other parts, it is kind of this attitude, you're a Silicon Valley company, we're just Africans, so you tell us exactly what to do. So we discovered this problem relatively early on. You would also notice that, there is already some internet utilization in Africa, you hardly see any blocks, you hardly see any kind of initiative where people really actively participate. There are exceptions, but for the most part, considering how many internet users are there already, it's relatively low. So there is a lot of fear not being adequate, really, compared to the rest of the world. Before we're going more into it, the way I would summarize it, it's almost like, think of there is a big party going on with an open invitation, and where there is this gang, they always hang out together, they know each other, and they're having fun. But you have one member, and again, it's an open invitation. If you have one member that is basically sitting outside, waiting outside, and doesn't dare to come in. And the question then is how to solve the problem. Is the gang going to the member and pulling them in, or is there another way basically to encourage this outsider, so to speak, to join the party? But that is exactly what the situation is right now, where the way I would summarize it really in terms of this challenge, opportunity going forward, and that's the same whether it's for the individual consumer or for businesses or for government, it is really whether they can overcome their fear really and become an active player, or if I come up with another movie example, and I hope you don't mind, but then that would be the last one for today. For those of you who have seen the movie Wall Street, and actually the second is coming out next week, and there is this main character, Gecko, and when he was talking to this younger guy who he abused for his bad businesses, where he basically told him that everyone has a choice in life, whether you're a wolf or a sheep. And that's why I basically mentioned this kind of example. I mean, for Africa, it's basically more or less the decision point is coming in terms of how they move into the information age. Are they going to be a wolf or they're just going to be a sheep? So let's talk about the $99 computer again and connecting the dots. So we started with it and shipped it and found out that there was no infrastructure. So the question was really, I mean, like a lot of other companies or organizations do, and we got bombarded with requests from resellers, distributors from Africa and also other parts of the world. What are your terms? I want to be a partner, and we could hardly keep up, send out contracts and everything, and then the first shipments went out. So the first surprise then was what we did not expect at all is there wasn't, I mean, with a lot of consumers, but also, I mean, individual orders, but also with some of the resellers, there wasn't a good understanding that a laptop doesn't come with an internet connection. So you still need to sign up with a plan. And it might sound stupid. By the way, we also had the same problem with a lot of folks here in the U.S. But for first-time users not familiar, let's call it, with the information age, and sometimes we're just too arrogant to understand that, but if someone really doesn't know, they just doesn't know. And let's say when you write about the product and Wi-Fi and what all you can do, people assumed initially that it would come with internet access. So with our partners then, we had to find a solution, I mean, for different geographies in Africa, how to basically connect it and also how to distribute it there. Because the $99 computer isn't really the answer to the problem. It is, again, the entire mindset and the entire infrastructure around that. And again, since we're pretty time limited, I can only, in that regards, give you a couple of ideas and a couple of examples. The one is what seemed to be working really well is that our partners then in Africa, for example, signed up churches. And we then put a hotspot in a church, and they sold the laptops then to their members. And either they lived close enough to the church that they got a signal, or they had a good reason, which everyone liked a lot, to come back to the church on a regular basis and check their emails and do this kind of things. Same thing, I mean, happened with a couple of local grocery chains where they put it into their outlets and offered Wi-Fi for free. And people, it was a win-win situation. People had a reason to come back. And while they were there, they bought some more groceries, but they got connection to the internet. We gave that a name, and whether it makes sense or not, but we call it the Cherry Pell Cafe concept, which is kind of in existing outlets like coffee shops or groceries, or it's now in some barber shops and other kind of things, creating this kind of win-win situation with very little additional overhead for the existing store owner, an advantage for the consumer, because make no mistake, not each and every one of them is able to afford a cell phone plan or direct connection to the internet, especially when you go into rural areas. So the net behind that is really we try to enter into a peer-to-peer dialogue with our partners, not this American company, and this is the concept, and here is how we do it everywhere in the world, and take it or leave it. We came up with a, you could say, with a checklist for every single situation where we basically analyzed it and provided input, but at the end of the day, the partner or the church or whoever the counterpartner really was then able to bundle the solution together. We signed off, and this was one of the areas there that created confidence. And I'm trying to use the word not too often tonight, but this is really behind many, many things what we're doing is boosting confidence, making people more comfortable that it is their thing, that is not a remote-controlled initiative where they're just consuming what Americans and Europeans and others are doing. It's their solution. And I think that really gave it a lot of buy-in. The other thing what we, as Cherry Pell here, learned was a lot of successful concepts, what you do in Africa when you bundle these programs around education, you can take a lot of it back home. Because we once described, I mean, this demographic group as low income, poor education, and low self-esteem, low confidence. You find that demographic group here in the States as well. You find it in Europe. You find it in Asia. You find it in literally every country in the world. And it's always the same problem that you're trying to provide tools, in that case, just a computer, and it doesn't matter. Well, it's $99 or $500. If there is no confidence to use it as a learning tool, the project is going to fail. So we learned a lot here, really, how to encourage people to develop confidence, really, and allow them to make mistakes, and brought a lot back home. And we applied the African model, so to speak, in the U.S. as well, and with similar success. So whenever we basically use the term Africa, it's kind of a synonym for this kind of demographic group. So we handled hundreds of resellers, initiatives all over the world, created concepts for education. But at some point, really, we as Cheripa really decided that there is a much broader initiative required than what we as a hardware vendor can do or maybe even should do. So we decided to spin it off into a nonprofit organization. And as I mentioned before, internally, the initiative was called Education Wins, or EdWin, within CherryPal. And now we have a nonprofit, which is called the EdWin Foundation. So also Education Wins, the EdWin Foundation. And let me briefly elaborate here, and then I want to open it up for questions to give you enough time for that. So we have taken over everything what we learned from CherryPal and added a number of things. And the summary, actually, of the EdWin Foundation, or the main objectives we're focusing on, is the first one is about provide free educational software. We're working with partners there, I mean, the large education vendors, and we talked some of them into providing the content for free. We also started a pilot open source courseware, open courseware. And what that is just very briefly, you'll see a little bit on the website, edwinfoundation.org, but you'll see more shortly. We have some volunteer high schools already signed up here in the States as well as also overseas, and we're basically recording class sessions and so that someone in Africa can enjoy a math lesson that's taking place somewhere in the U.S. And the other way around. Plus, we give the students then the opportunity to discuss particular math problems or English literature or whatever amongst each other. So we don't want to replicate another system that's already out there, but we found out so far that we make content available basically cross-cultural borders. Students anywhere in the world are very interested in it. African students are very interested in what's going on here, but also students here in the U.S. and other parts of the world are very interested in what's going on in Africa. So that is about providing things. The next one is about promoting things. What we're promoting is concepts, and we're building them more out as courseware, really for people anywhere in the world, because also in Africa, how to get access to the internet, what the different kind of options are when you are in remote areas, and to understand better the technical background. So like, for example, what we're doing there is helping churches and all different kind of organizations, and we're working a lot with other nonprofits or NGOs where they don't have that technical expertise, basically helping them to solve their technical problems. And the third one here is, it might not sound that obvious to you, but it's about protect. What we also found out in Africa, the internet adoption there is going so fast that people are pretty gullible about things that are going on. So they don't know about the risks of the internet. And so we have a special training program, but also offer that online then, and informing the general public, and in particular, first-time internet users or not that savvy users, really to learn about privacy issues on the internet. In order to avoid identity theft and many other kind of things, and there is a growing movement right now. There are a number of sites that have been exposed, how they collect your personal information, big sites actually, where we owe it to people where, let's say, on the one hand, we're encouraging them to use the internet for educational purposes, entertainment and everything, but I think it's only fair that we also warn them of the dangers that are really behind that. Another thing, what we're trying to accomplish here, Cherry Pal already did some things in that area, but we're now within the Edwin Foundation. The biggest growth problem really within Africa here, with all these young entrepreneurs and resellers and organizations, is funding. Meaning, Cherry Pal, we had a lot of resellers that basically order one laptop, and the next month they order another one, and then another one. And as you can imagine, the shipping cost is relatively high, and then we asked them why they're doing that. And then they said, I could sell much more, but that's basically my cycle time, and I cannot afford more than one. So what we're trying to do is kind of what we have codenamed internally as an opportunity fund, where we're trying to raise funds, which is basically in particular for, let's say, organizations and entrepreneurs in these countries to help them basically their business going. We had in early discussions before the session started, there are some movements in Africa where they're trying to adopt the Chinese model, which is kind of if you create jobs, you get a loan. But it's not everywhere, and it's a process. Most of our partners, even the larger ones, who could do much more volume, are just stuck at that point where their growth is limited by the funds available. And we're trying to find a way to help them with it. You might think that there are billions of dollars available for Africa and that sort of thing, but not necessarily for this kind of initiatives. And again, neither Cherry Pal nor the Edwin Foundation is predominantly into a program that is giving away laptops. And let me also very clearly address this. The overwhelming feedback, what I really receive from people in Africa, whether consumers or resellers or churches or other kind of partners, they don't want that. It is insulting. It is affecting their humility, really. They want to pay for it. There are now microfinancing programs for individuals and many other kind of things. It does not make sense just to ship boatloads of free laptops over and think that eventually they will figure it out. They want to grow with the entire process. They want to buy it for it. And even if it's just $3 or $4 a month, but they want to save up money, they want to buy one, they want to go through the learning experience and become a part of it. And for that kind of programs, again, we're trying to come up with this opportunity fund, as we have codenamed it right now. Of course, there's always a reason why a speaker is here, right? And usually, I think either they say it at the very beginning, or they're as polite as I am and wait till the very end. The Edwin Foundation is raising funds. So what we have done, right now is, and I think it's coming out tomorrow or the day after, this is basically a pre-launch edition of Cherry Pal, and Edwin is not selling it, but we're raising funds, and for a $250 donation, you get a pre-launch limited edition, very fast, an Android 2.1 tablet computer, so-called CherryPad America, as a thank you gift. And this is a limited campaign until end of the month. We want to reach our initial fundraising goal by the end of the month. And the proceeds for that will be predominantly used to elevate this open courseware program with all bells and whistles. I think that's it for now. I hope I gave you a good overview. We have still some time left, and any questions?
Before we do that, I'd like to thank you, Max, for coming today. I'm your chair for this evening. Shehu Hassan is my name, and we'll open up to for the questions.
Okay, I'll be passing the mic around. Right now, though, I have a question. I'm a member of the partnering organization, NorCal Peace Corps Association, and I was wondering, since we have a number of Peace Corps volunteers that are interested in this information extension and education in Africa, if you've approached United States Peace Corps in Washington, D.C. to present this idea, because it's so exciting to many of us.
To the best of my knowledge, no. I have to admit I'm not familiar with every single campaign or activity, but I have to say, to the best of my knowledge, no. I mean, we did a lot with just random organizations like Teachers Without Borders, and they, I think, heavily publicized it, what they were doing with it, and other organizations. But they're more than, I mean, usually our approaches, I mean, probably against all theories of good marketing, we usually don't reach out to people. I mean, I can truly say people always approach us, and that was basically the natural selection in the past. So it doesn't mean that we're not interested, but we were more than busy basically just handling the workload of requests we got in.
Piggybacking on her suggestion and relating to organizations, and you sort of answered that you haven't reached out marketing-wise, but I'm familiar, and I'm sure people in this room are familiar with people that would be willing to assist you to move your product and ideas forward. And had you consider, like some people in Washington, D.C., one group is called CFA, that's the Constituents for Africa, and they are having a Peace Corps meeting as we speak.
The answer here would basically, we have done neither of it. The only thing was here, I think, simplified, the success of Edwin became a huge burden for CherryPal. I mean, CherryPal has to compete in a global market, and our products are very inexpensive anyway, and we just couldn't carry the additional cost anymore. And so at some point on a board level, it was either we abandon Edwin and we do it like all the other vendors too. I mean, here is the hardware, buy it or don't buy it, but that's it. Or we spin off basically the Edwin program, and we decided we rather do that. I mean, CherryPal is still heavily supporting the Edwin Foundation, but, I mean, CherryPal can do it by themselves. Though we have no history of, let's say, grant writing or any of that. I mean, we're the typical organization that is basically assuming, I mean, it's just us. Everyone wants something from us, but, I mean, in terms of paying the bills, it's just us. And I mean, any kind of help in that regards is very appreciated. And I mean, no matter what, I mean, we will continue with Edwin within the Edwin Foundation. But the more support we get, the more we can expand the program. And what we have right now is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, also, I hope you don't mind leaving Africa for a moment. We get bombarded by public school districts within the U.S., where we have a hard time to fulfill their demands because we just don't have the bandwidth. But there is a good understanding now that the things in terms of, I didn't have time to go too much into detail earlier, but it's really, I mean, we have set up these programs where we really encourage users to develop confidence. I mean, let me elaborate for 30 seconds there. I mean, we had a very successful project, development project, actually, with the university in Nairobi, Kenya. And 10 students, and it was a joint development effort between Stanford and Nairobi, where in the beginning it was very bumpy, where basically the students in Nairobi said, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, tell me what to do. And we really gave them hell, where it was basically, I mean, speak up or leave the project. I mean, it's not good enough just to repeat what I just said. I mean, I remember what I just said. So come up with your own ideas. And I mean, at the end, it was really, really successful. But we had to teach them first, but encourage them to speak up. And so now there are many, many ideas how to do it better, how to do it differently, but you have to break through that ice. So this is Nairobi, but Nairobi is in many neighborhoods here in the U.S. as well. If you talk to particular kids, again, in this demographic group of low income, poor education, and low self-esteem, and I could tell you some really, really sad stories around that, it's hard for these kids to break out. You have to do a little bit more. And I think with particular learning software, particular projects, courseware where people get encouraged, I mean, you cannot save every soul, so to speak, but you can help really getting towards that. So what I'm saying is we get a lot of requests from a lot of public school districts in the U.S., and I mean, we can even respond only to a fraction of it because we don't have the bandwidth.
Yes, I was wondering of the many countries that there are in Africa, does your degree of penetration vary a lot between countries? Does it depend on the political situation, or is it fairly even? Are you doing it in Zimbabwe, for instance? And the other question I would have was, how does the computer usage and availability in Africa now compare with other countries like India, for instance?
There are a lot of good questions, and I wish I could give you a very simple answer. So first, the most honest answer is it's really in every country within Africa completely different. Even within one country, depending on what region, you might have a phenomenal infrastructure, and then a couple of miles on the other side, you have no infrastructure at all. And that also pretty much drives the utilization, but also it's very much dependent on income level. I mean, it's no secret you have vast areas there where people, I mean, statistics are the one thing, but really there are vast areas where people don't even make $100 a year. And it's very sad to say there is next to no chance right now to move them to a program like this. There is just no infrastructure at all. And, of course, another thing we didn't address earlier, I mean, one requirement is some literacy, right? I mean, if that and that's what has to be done outside of it. So that has to be done by the local school. If someone cannot read or write, it's a problem with a laptop, right, or a similar device. I mean, at large, I mean, there are more countries like Nigeria, Ghana, in West Africa that are more on the proactive side, really. I would say more as a trend, the more you go up in the north, in the French-speaking part, it's rather poor, really, I mean, in terms of utilization. And there are a lot of problems, but also in terms of power supply. I mentioned earlier, Burkina Faso now is down to about 2 hours of power supply a day. I mean, we're trying it with solo church and other kind of things. But 2 hours of power a day also has a huge impact on the earning capacity of people. So, I mean, it's kind of, they get half a day off. There's no chance for them to make money. So it's a very, very bad situation there. And there are a number of other countries that are, pretty broke. And we can't change that. I mean, if that basic infrastructure is not there, we cannot change that. Does it answer your question? Thanks.
Yes, I'm trying to better understand CherryPal. And first question really relates to the computer itself. You haven't described to us what the capacity is, how it compares to my laptop or my desktop. I have no idea whether it has a hard drive, what it is. And then the number of units, how many units are out there already? Are there 50 or 500 or 5,000 that you've already sold? And when you talk about the fact that you don't have the bandwidth to deal with schools, I don't know whether that means that you can't manufacture the units or you don't have the staff to deal with it or something else, but how many units do you need to manufacture to in order to break even at the price that you are currently trying to sell it?
There are a lot of questions. First of all, as you might remember, and I just initially didn't want to waste too much time on it, I had a technical session for 1.5 hours in my Stanford presentation. Since I suppose not everyone is interested in that, I would refer you to it. I mean, you'll find it on YouTube, CherryPal, Stanford. It's posted in the Stanford channel. It's 1.5 hours, very detailed about the architecture. In a nutshell, to answer your question, I mean, there is some unique design in it. The processor, I mean, for the $99 model, the processor is much smaller. We're using fewer components. And the performance is still okay. It's not super fast, but it's okay. So most likely, if you have a $1,000 plus laptop at home, ours is faster, but you can still do the same thing. So, I mean, you can browse. I mean, they're all the same components on it. It just might be a little bit slower. But the entire technical part is in the Stanford presentation. The next question was, refresh my memory, please. We're very conservative in that area since we're closely watched and we're part of this industry. All I would say is probably more than you would think and more than the numbers you mentioned. I mean, we have a lot of partners in Africa, but the policy is we don't want to publish this number officially for a number of different reasons. We don't have a bottleneck in terms of manufacturing capacity. The bottleneck is to support our partners in Africa. And the bottleneck here, to some degree, is also a financing issue because our partners in Africa don't have the money. I mean, they have demand, but they don't have the money to pay for the units, as we call it. And we don't have the financial capacity to advance it. So we have some limitations there. But I mean, we have some partners in Africa that are financially very well off. They order large volumes, and others, we're helping them to grow. When I was referring to bandwidth earlier, it's more about personnel. All the requests we're getting, and we're a very frugal company, so just because we get a lot of requests doesn't mean we recruit many more people. We have set prices for our units, and we don't want to increase the cost. And so, I mean, that's also a reason why we spin off Edwin. But But CherryPal is a hardware manufacturer where we're probably now, I mean, we're dual headquartered, we're Hong Kong as well as here in Palo Alto. I mean, we don't have a production bottleneck.
Great. Thank you for your presentation and all for all of the good work that you're doing. I have two questions for you. One is, how did you hear about open courseware, and what do you think about its potential? I guess, and I have three then. And have any ministries of education or information reached out to you?
Ministry of Education, I would have to say not to the best of my knowledge. We learned about it through recommendation of or requests of high schools here. And then we actually started with that, that some of the high schools we were in touch with in Africa, and they got CherryPals, asked us if we could help them to find partner high schools in the U.S. And then while they were talking, then the idea was, how cool would it be if you in Missouri watch basically the classes from Africa, and the ones in Africa watch the ones in Missouri. And that was basically the starting point. And right now, I would say, I think it's a lot of fun for both parties, and I can really, really see that as a major breakthrough going forward. The best that can always happen to you is when learning or education is fun. I mean, it's kind of, we all can relate to it back in high school or so with math. I mean, if you have a good math teacher, you get through it and you probably have okay grades. But if you have a really bad math teacher, I mean, a lot of people fail because they just refuse to listen to it. And you can do a lot with pepped up and fun environment. And let's say, as we all know, within a particular age group, social networks are very accepted. And if you tie educational content into a social network, like you can talk to someone in South Africa or in Japan or in India about a particular math problem or English literature or why the chicken does this and the gorilla does something else. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it doesn't have to be just within the direct neighborhood. You can really do that on a global level if you watch the same user-generated content, really, which happens to be the class in your school in the neighborhood. So, I mean, in the beginning, we were quite neutral to it, but I think it got legs. There is magic behind it. I mean, people like it. People really like it. It's like the YouTube phenomenon. I mean, there's so much garbage, honestly. But you could watch it for hours and hours and hours. It's entertaining. And it's less professional than a cop show on TV, but in many cases it's more entertaining. And the same thing is kind of with this user-generated classroom things, where then the teachers say something funny and some students say something funny, and then they bless you, and then they tell a little bit about what happened in Nairobi or something like that. It gives gives this personal touch, and then you can respond to it. And I think it got legs.
My question's following up on the same stream of thinking. If we use the one laptop per child, he didn't think it totally through. Nicholas Negroponte.
Yeah.
He has a strange brother. But it's fashioned on the educational model, which is you get the Ministry of Education to order large volumes by school and district,
yeah,
and therefore you drive the generation. Most of us who have a little teaching background know that you get the elementary, then build to the middle, and then the high, and then the post-secondary, right? So that's kind of a development model. accepted in educational theory. Then I want to jump to, because there are political problems, though, with that kind of marketing, right? Because you obviously still need the teachers, right? You have to have human beings.
Absolutely.
That can work with the, no matter how wonderful the gadgets
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
But then jumping to Cisco, they run that ad, which is a lot of fun, and the kids in the American classroom say, hi, Ellen. I don't even know who she is, but she's famous, right? Ellen somebody?
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to China. And she says, oh, I just went to the farm, right? And they show her as a little girl. And then the screen pops up, and there's a classroom of kids in China.
Yeah.
So Cisco kind of opens that possibility, but as all teachers know, you need the curriculum, which is the magic, I think, that you know you're talking about. So it takes a lot of partnerships at different levels to think it through. But doesn't the UN, or didn't they have their information technology conference in Tunisia one year? And is there someone that's doing that kind of country and continent planning and third world planning?
Let me quickly respond to it, and I think that's really giving me a good way to summarize what we actually really do. As you can probably tell by now, I'm not a teacher, and we don't have that infrastructure in place, neither in CherryPell nor in the Edwin Foundation. What we do is we support teachers. We support local infrastructure. I mean, as a hardware vendor, you're used to run projects with great detail and looking ahead, because if you forget something, there's huge implications. That's what we do. We don't want to interfere or change an entire education model. But what we do is, if there is an idea out there, it's not that different as with hardware development. We'll give it a shot. And guess what? If people like it, it's probably not that bad. But we're not coming from the education market or know who is in charge in D.C. or anything like that. Our purpose is to help the locals in Africa and our partners there, basically to make the best out of it. I hope that Edwin will grow into it, but I think we will still be this project management infrastructure company, but we're more on the technical side, really. And again, we don't want to compete with one laptop per child.
Before we say anything, another question. We have room for one more question.
I'll be real quick.
Let's say two.
Okay.
I mean, we had two.
In terms of, you mentioned that nobody can make money if they only have 2 hours worth, if they have to cram their whole life into 2 hours per day.
Yeah.
So it's very, having great toys is wonderful, but if you can't play with them, then what's the point of having, it's like having data. If you can't
sure.
use it, then what's the point? So in terms of companies like PG&E and all the power, Africa is a shared interest. So how come is CherryPell and the Edwin Foundation approaching all the people who can get the power so that people can spend more time with the systems? I mean, they should be coming to you because it would generate much more revenue for them. It just makes sense. It's a shared interest.
So the solution we came up with is we really came up with a very, very, very inexpensive, well-working, unfortunately I don't have it here, but it's a pretty bulky solo charger where actually in real time you can run a CherryPell, then you plug it out, or for that matter a cell phone or another low energy consuming laptop, of course, as well, and you can charge it during the day. It holds the battery for another 8 hours, where you can work another 8 hours during the night. And we don't sell it in the U.S. because the demand in Africa and other places is so high. But actually, all the cost until it is at the consumer is less than $50. And so you take the bundle off. I knew that this would happen. you take the laptop together with this charger. And you also have to see sometimes a couple of families share one, or again the church organizes it, or at the grocery store the same way you can lease or rent a special vacuum cleaner here somewhere. you can. There are some grocery stores where we know they rent the solar charger per day and other kind of things. It might not give direct answer to your question, but I mean, again, we're a hardware and an infrastructure company as CherryPal, and as the Edwin Foundation, we're trying to build a framework with a lot of support that people can make it happen. But we're not really in education. It is really content is generated by someone else. We're just the facilitator.
So,
welcome.
Understanding that you have that cell phones are evolving very quickly to become handheld computers, how are you expecting to compete against the big cell phone, companies that are already in Africa? And the second part of my question is, what is your funding goal for Edwin?
I didn't catch the last one.
What is your funding goal for Edwin?
I mean, we're right now trying to raise with this pre-launch campaign about $250,000 until end of the month to really build this open courseware program. And and coming to your first question, which is really as a CherryPal representative, great pleasure for me to answer to it. We're actually coming out, and we're already offering that in some developing countries, but we're coming out in the U.S. End of the year with that, which is a very inexpensive solution where basically you have a phone and you have a tablet, and you can operate both simultaneously with the same plan. Let me reiterate, not with two plans, with one and the same plan, where the thing what you just mentioned, that some manufacturers believe that the phone in the future looks like this. We don't think that's very, we don't see you love to. That was my first reaction. It's kind of what we call the CherryPal Duet solution, which is from a technical perspective, there's tethering behind that. So we basically, we have a feature phone and a tablet, and the feature phone is developed that it's very strong on the voice side. So whatever you do with your ear, and the tablet naturally takes over everything what you do with your eyes. And as soon they're connected with each other through Wi-Fi, so we're staying away from 3G. Only the phone does 3G, which again lowers the cost. And as long as you have them within a couple of feet amongst you, it works beautifully. The trend right now, the large carriers in the U.S. are trying to sell you two plans. And so we can do that with one plan. So I think we're well positioned. However, whether this is our market or not, might be another question. Again, our focus is mostly for consumers that want a high quality, low energy consuming and inexpensive product. But we are not this hip brand or anything. So we built our products for a particular segment in the market. So we feel very comfortable there, and I think we have very cool stuff there.
Max, thank you so much for coming tonight.
Thank you for having me.